Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with one of our last living links to a truly groundbreaking group that holds a special piece of World War II history, the 10th Mountain Division. Howard Cook volunteered to be one of America's first ski troopers, and when we left off, he had made it to Camp Hale in Colorado. And what can you tell us about the training you had there at Camp Hale? What were some of the things they were teaching you guys how to do?
Well, they were teaching us, number one, how to march, and also how to ski in snow and how to live on icy and snow conditions. And so we're learning a lot about that. My first night, I want to tell you about the first night I got there, delivered to Pando, Colorado. I walked 3.5 or 4 miles up to 2nd Battalion headquarters, carrying all the stuff I got in Monterey, finding myself a bunk in the 2nd Degree Headquarters barracks. We had dinner, and then Sergeant DeRozier, this man was from New Hampshire, and he'd been in the snow. So Sergeant DeRozier took us out to the combat training area. They had explosives inside the area, and they had barbed wire, and you had to learn how to crawl on the ground and get under the barbed wire and feign you were going to attack the soldiers on the other side. And so that's what we did the first night. And I said, boy, what I've had quite a day. You know, I just got up there in the train and I'm crawling under the barbed wire, and that's what Sergeant DeRozier put me through. So then what happened is that we kept learning how to use skis and climb with ropes and pitons and at rather excessive heights, which I had already done. And after Kurt told me to get the Sierra Club, I started going to Yosemite Valley and climbing some of the walls there. And for example, Cathedral Spire and a couple of other Washington Column and some of those and around Yosemite Falls. And so I had some experience climbing rocks, and I never did climb, like more recently, somebody finally climbed El Capitan. As you enter Yosemite Valley, it's the cliff on the north side of the valley, and it's a tremendous, tremendous climb, and it's now been done by a few people, and I never got up it. I never got up it.
So they have you up there in the Rockies in extreme conditions, skiing, rock climbing, learning how to survive in tough conditions.
So fierce temperatures, 40 below, was one of the worst.
And they must have done some weapons training with you, too.
All weapons training. We had all kinds of weapons to learn. Of course, I was in rifle platoons, so I had a M1, which was called a Garand rifle, and it was a fairly new rifle. We were just getting in, and before they had Springfield rifles, but now we have the Garand magnificent rifle, and it would fire 8 rounds in a clip, 30 caliber bullet.
And how did you feel about the idea of going overseas?
Well, At that time, one of the things that we were at Camp Hale, and then in July, they told us we were going to Camp Swift, and that was down in Texas. And there were all kinds of rumors that were going to break us up. We were not going to go. And we hadn't gotten into combat yet, and so we were somewhat concerned because we were training to go into combat, and nothing was happening. So the big problem was that we had to get somewhere. So when we get to Camp Swift, we're down in Texas, and now we're walking 25-mile hikes in 110-degree temperatures. But we were all in good shape. We were outstanding shape because we'd been up there at 9,400 feet, climbing 12,000, 13,000 mountains. So we were in good shape. So we had no problems. We had no problems in Texas. And then all of a sudden they said, we want you to take this test. And they said, you're going to Officers Candidate School in Fort Benning, Georgia. Got to Fort Benning, Georgia, and I said, here's the Benning School for Boys. That's what they called the Benning School for Boys. So it was supposed to be very tough training there, but it was a piece of cake for a guy that was trained up in Colorado, I tell you. Several of us from Colorado went to the Class 359 of Officers Candidate School, and we were in great shape, you know. Sergeant DeRozier went with us, but he didn't make it through. Several of us graduated there, and we wound up with second lieutenant commissions. And so now we were officers.
What was your reward for earning that commission? What did they do with you next?
They sent me back to Camp Swift. I was there for a little while, and then they said, you're going on a train to Norfolk, Virginia. And then they didn't tell me what's going to happen in Norfolk, Virginia, but I got on a beautiful steamship. They took the 85th and the 87th over, and the 86th had already gone over. So I get to Bay of Napoli, and the Bay of Napoli was filled with sunken ships. You could see nothing but sunken ships in the Bay of Napoli. And they put me on a train, sent me up to Leghorn. They called it Leghorn, on the Tyrrhenian Sea in Italy. Livorno is the Italian name for Leghorn. Livorno. So we get up there, and then they assign me as a replacement C Company of the 86th Regiment, which was located in Pisa. So I went up there, and a fellow by the name of Bill Shawn, who came back later as our company commander. Bill Shawn was wounded in combat up on the Apennine Mountains when we were patrolling around Mount Belvedere and Gorgolesco. So Bill Shawn was the weapons platoon leader, but he got wounded, so he was back in the hospital. So they put me in as the weapons platoon leader, so I took Bill Shawn's place. And Bill Shawn became a great friend when he returned. We became very dear friends for several years. And Bill Shawn was a good guy, but he has also passed since.
You told us about some of your training and 40 below zero and up at 14,000 feet and skiing and climbing and all that. But what about your first taste of combat? And were you really prepared for what you were going to be dealing with there in Italy?
Well, my first recollection that I knew that I was in combat was a bullet flew right by my right ear, and I heard that, baby. And I knew I was in trouble. And that was when the Germans attacked us up on Riva Ridge, when they found out we had gotten on Ridge, because they didn't know that we'd gotten up there.
So I want to talk about this. So this is February of 1945. So you've just turned 20 years old. And this is Riva Ridge on Mount Belvedere, which they had tried to take three times and failed, right?
That's correct. They tried to take it three times and failed. And one of the reasons was that the Germans had artillery over on Riva. They could fire on Mount Belvedere very nicely. You could see everything from Riva Ridge on Mount Belvedere. And so it was a great spot to have an artillery outfit. And every time they tried to take Riva Ridge before we got there, they'd be driven off by this artillery fire. So when our division commander was Major General George P. Hayes, and George Price Hayes had been in the artillery in World War I. Mm. And he'd won a Medal of Honor in World War I. So he was a pretty good soldier. And he knew how to handle that Riva Ridge. The first thing they did was, you're going to take Riva Ridge before you take Mount Belvedere. So sure enough, we, 1st Battalion of 86th Mountain Infantry, at 7:30 in the morning, we went over there and started to climb that sucker. And it was very steep. Riva Ridge was very steep, and we climbed it. But fortunately, prior to that, there had been a little warm spell, and a lot of the snow and stuff that had been on the mountain was melted, too, had mounted often, so we had a little easier climb than we would have had if we had that ice and snow to go up. Anyway, we got up the mountain without any problem, just climbing. We did have a lot of fixed ropes up the mountain to get over the steep stuff.
Yeah, and that's what the picture I want you to give people, because they're imagining this in their mind's eye, and a lot of people, if they go on a hike or something, they're on a trail with switchbacks, and it's pretty easy to navigate. Doesn't sound like that's what you guys were doing. This was a pretty sheer,
very, very steep, precipitous slope going up, and all the way up. See, we had a climbing team at each company, and the climbing team would set up fixed ropes for us to climb up over the very steep parts of the place. And so all the way up, we had rope, and we had ability to get up over the very steep areas. So we were doing fine, and we got up there to almost to the top. And what a wonderful thing happened. All of a sudden, a fog came up and blocked our view of the top and blocked the view of the Germans so that we couldn't see each other. That fog was a blessing for us because we got up on the top of the mountain and started to dig in our positions on the top of the mountain on the other side, on the north side, so we were looking down on German territory.
Well, and you talk about that fog, so I want to make sure I understand, because I'm imagining you on some of these steep sections where you're climbing a rope, and if you're climbing a rope on the side of the mountain and somebody starts shooting at you, it's kind of hard to get out of the way.
It'd be tough. Yeah.
But they can't see you while you're doing that because of the fog?
The fog. So they couldn't see us coming up because of the fog, because the fog came up when we got up to the top of the mountain, and it was great because it permitted us to get on top of the mountain and find places to dig in on the north side of the mountain so we could have positions up there. And so the Germans weren't really up at the top of the mountain. They were there, though, and we found them. It was very interesting. When the bullet went by my right ear, we started fighting and went over and found a German dugout with probably 70 soldiers in it, 70 prisoners, I think we took. We opened up the dugout, and these guys had been asleep. They'd been asleep because they didn't think anybody could get up that south side of River Ridge. They didn't think anybody could climb up that. So we had it pretty well. In other words, we didn't have really any war until we climbed up to the top, dug our positions in, then they found out we were up there, and then they came up, and they were firing at us and trying to drive us off the mountain. But we did find this dugout after we got dug in, and we went out and found him in there. Said, you know, heraus, kommen Sie heraus mit die Hände herauf. And that means your hands up. I knew enough German to say that to him. Kommen Sie heraus mit die Hände herauf. So we got him out, and they all came out, and we took them prisoner. We sent them down on the south side of the mountain where we came up, and then the Germans found out that we were up there, and then they sent as many guys as they could get a hold of up that mountain to get us off. And that was the 19th of February, and they wanted us off of that mountain, and they attacked us constantly until, as a matter of fact, one of the fine guys, our executive officer of C Company, was on Ridge X, and he was killed. Another fine enlisted man, Ferdinand Brecht, he was killed, and he was a wonderful soldier. And anyway, it was a difficult time on River Ridge, but I didn't get wounded.
Well, and I'm sure you came pretty close, and you mentioned a couple guys you knew who didn't make it out of there, and what I read were 21 members of your unit were killed in that battle, 52 more wounded, 3 taken prisoner. So this was pretty intense, pretty dangerous, and there was another little story I read where it said you guys are up there, the fog had protected you. Seems to me that might be a little nerve-wracking too, because if they can't see you, you don't know where they are either. But then there, I read something and there was a quote from you where you guys were looking down from the ridge, you saw the Germans and you waved to them and they thought you guys were German, telling them to come closer. Your quote was, if we were more combat wise, we would have let them get in really close, and that maybe you started firing at them too early.
Yes, this was the problem. We saw them. We were going to let them come in closer so we could demolish them. But we also had the guys in our company who were cooks, and they hadn't had much training really with rifles and stuff like that. And so we got in the firefight. They started firing at them when they saw them, see? And that drove them off. Yeah, they knew we were there. Then they knew that we were there. And so that kind of broke up our plan to suck them right in and get them where we could get them all, see, but didn't work.
So the cooks were a little happy on the trigger?
They're a little quick on the trigger because we didn't train them right, I think. I mean, I don't think they had the good training that the rest of us had, so that was what happened up there.
You mentioned two guys that you knew and obviously had great respect for who were killed in that battle. And I'm just trying to imagine being in your shoes. You're a 20-year-old kid and you're dealing with guys that you trained with, guys that you knew passing away within your vision. How did you handle and process and move on from that?
Well, in the case of my executive officer, he was a wonderful guy. And of course, when I joined the company, I really didn't know much about the company commander because he didn't even talk to me. John was the one that talked to me, and he was so good to me. He was a really good guy and made me feel very comfortable being now the new weapons platoon leader. So when he was killed down on Ridge X, that did turn me off a little bit, but I knew we were in a war and we had to keep going, you know. When you're there, you got to do it, you know. That's all. It's very simple.
It's time for our final break, but there's more to come with soon-to-be 99-year-old Howard Cook, including how this returning soldier and his wife Averill ended up in Life magazine. You can find more about that at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, and we'll be right back after this.